Hello, welcome to the Snooker Scene Podcast. I'm Dave Hendon. This podcast usually comes out every Tuesday. I'm bringing this one forward. It's the day of the German Masters final. I'm here in Berlin. Just a few days ago, I sat down with Anthony Hamilton, who's a fascinating character, been on the tour since 1991. Now, as you'll know, if you're listening to this today, he's in the final. He's playing Ali Carter in the final. And he talks a lot in the podcast about the fact that he, up to press, has not won a ranking event. He's lost in two finals. He talks about how that feels. So I thought if I waited until after the final, it'll all be a little bit out of date. It might be a chance to learn more about Anthony as he takes on Ali in a huge match today here in Berlin. Probably the biggest match of his career, really, although he's been in two finals. When you consider the amount of time he spent on tour, the fact that chances are getting fewer for him to win a title, and indeed the atmosphere he's going to play in, and he's got his parents here as well, this is a huge deal. So settle back and listen to my podcast with the Sheriff of Pottingham himself, Anthony Hamilton.
Anthony, how did you get into snooker? What was your introduction to the game?
It was weird because I never even watched it, liked it, none of the family liked it, knew anything about it. So I was all football at 13, 14. I damaged my foot and I couldn't play for 6 months. So on a Saturday, my next door neighbour said, "Do you want to come down? I'll just go into the snooker club, snooker hall it was. Proper snooker hall, you know, with all the dossers and stuff." It's great. So I went in there and with him. I thought, why not? And I was, believe it or not, I played 24 the first frame, three reds, three blacks. Oh. We had a 6 foot pool table at home and stuff, but nothing serious. And then I just got addicted to it almost immediately on that first day. You know, I went the next week after, and then that was it. Football was gone, and I was just interested in the snooker.
Why do you think that was? What, I mean, it's sort of the million-dollar question for a lot of people, but why did you become so fascinated?
Well, we've got those sort of brains, you know, like, I think a lot of snooker players will tell you, I'm guessing, but, like, they're probably kids that spent a lot of time on their own, you know, doing their own games. You know, they do those dice games and stuff for hours on end. I used to go out a lot, play football, but I used to be able to do that as well. I still can, like, on the PlayStation and stuff. I can do it for hours. Do you know what I mean? So we've got that repetitive. We should work in a factory, on a factory line, really, because you could just do that for hours. And snooker's, if you get good at snooker early doors, it's so you can see the improvements coming every week, and it's addictive then. Do you know what I mean? I made a century after about 11 months, and my dad bought a full size snooker table, put it in the garage without me knowing. I came back from holiday, it was there, and that was it. Bang, just on it, like, staying up till like 2 in the morning on school nights without my folks knowing. They were going to bed thinking I was in bed, and I was still playing, you know, the classic, right, where you just don't do anything else, just play snooker.
And we're talking here, this is like the boom years, isn't it? So it's all the telly as well, so you were getting into watching as well, I guess, and also there would have been quite a thriving sort of scene as well for you to play in, junior scene.
Yeah, it was the junior scene was like the amateur scene. It was just the local scene. You start off locally, don't you, with your club and your then leagues and stuff like that, and you learn how to lose and you learn how to feel pressure. Then you like start fancying to do a bit of travelling and playing the junior ones, and you get pumped. First 7 or 8, you get pumped first match, but you sort of like the setup. You know what I mean? And then so the juniors were good. And at 16, I said to my dad, I thought he'd say no. I feel like I'm going to want to play full time. I thought he was just going to say, no, just go to university, which I would say if I was a dad. But he said, no, you could do it. He said, I think you should do it. You try it. And because you can go back to university when if it doesn't work out. You know what I mean? Like when you're 18, 20 or something. And that was it. Bang. I was just playing, getting up at 9 and going to work till 10, finishing it at 7, just improving all the time, playing in tournaments. And then you start winning a few tournaments, a few junior ones, and you get the bug. That's it. That's just it. And then the amateur game was mad strong then. So we had no word of a lie. We had a choice of 100 tournaments a year. You know what I mean? Like 50 weeks a year. And you had to miss one to go to another one. You had to miss one that was 128 players to go to another one which was 128 players.
And it kind of was like going to university for a snooker player, wasn't it, in a way?
Yeah.
Yeah, because you're playing all the time and getting better all the time.
And you're getting beat.
Yeah.
That's the thing. You're getting beat. You're getting up at 5 to go up, to drive down to South London to get pumped 3-0. And if you still want to do it on the Sunday and then the next weekend, then you know you're a snooker player. Do you know what I mean? So you're getting beat, and the disappointments way outweigh the good times. But the good times are good enough to make it worthwhile.
Mm. So you turned pro, I think it was the first year the game actually went open, 91.
Yeah.
What was that like? Because it was pre-Norbrek. That's it. I mean, a lot of people think the Norbrek was the start of that, but it was actually pre that. It was in clubs, wasn't it?
Yeah, with three clubs. Oldshot, Sheffield and... what was the other one? I wasn't there much. Northwest somewhere.
Bolton?
Yeah, that's it. So, I qualified for 6 out of those 10 tournaments that we had. And then we had to go to Trentham Gardens to try and get a win against the pro player that we had to draw. And that was that year. That might have been the second year. I can't remember. One of the years we had to go to Trentham Gardens. And it was either... I had three chances. I got to the point where I had three chances to get a ranking point. Remember the old ranking points?
Yeah.
And if you didn't get a ranking point, you had to play another, like, 100 matches the next season. If you won that one match, so that was the most pressure you've ever... And I remember beating Nigel Bond. I had three chances. I beat Nigel Bond, my practice partner at the time. And that was it. I was, like, ranked, 80-odd in the world then? And you know what I mean? Like, then you were off and running.
Mm. But to a lot of people, certainly back then, being a snooker pro was playing on the telly at the Masters or the World Championship. But, of course, there's so many matches that people, pre-internet as well, there's no cue track or anything like that. Yeah. Nobody knew anything about it, but you had to sort of, again, learn your trade.
Yeah, of course. The Norbrek, I mean, what did Ronnie win? 80-odd?
70-something, yeah.
You know, like, so you were there for, like, 2 months, 3 months in January. It was hideous.
Shouldn't be allowed.
It was hideous. You went out to your car, and it was just, you couldn't see any cars. They were all brown from the sand. You know what I mean? It was a horrific place. If you had to go back now, you would literally go mad. But because you're 20, you could do it. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, you're playing every day, so you're so sharp. It's crazy how sharp you were. You know, you're playing 60 matches a year without even like doing well. You know.
But did you feel like a pro though? Because like I say, the sort of holy grail is to be seen. I guess be on the telly, be in the big tournaments. But you don't start there, do you? You have to start right at the bottom.
Yeah, you start at the bottom. You don't feel like a pro really because. I didn't think about it at the time, but looking back, you're playing against all your peers that were on the amateur game. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But that was harder than the pro game for the first few matches, to be honest. So you were just playing in fancy pro-ams, in a way. You know what I mean? And then, so having to win 4 or 5 matches in every tournament against everyone that you knew like for years. Great players. You know, Dave Arnold, Ebden, me, Clarkey. There's loads of them. There's thousands of them. Great players. And then when you get on the TV, that's when you realise that you're a pro. I played McManus. He was like semi-final king by then, wasn't he? He was my age, but he had been in 50 semi-finals. So I had him at the Hexagon the first time on TV. I lost 5-2. I couldn't breathe. I loved it.
I was going to say, what was it like, the anticipation? Because obviously you would know, I guess, a few days before when you're playing and in family down and all that, all the rest of it. Was it a really nerve-wracking affair?
Yeah, it was. It was more like weird because the cameras put you off.
Yeah.
I think every player said told you that the cameras put you off. You're like all you can see. You can't see the cameras as such. You just see the people behind them watching you, thinking, if I miss this shot, what's everybody going to say? And they're still saying that, you know. And so you couldn't even concentrate. You was just happy to get 2 frames on the board. I was like, whew, just got that over and done with. Family were down, just my mum and dad. You know what I'm like. It was all like low key and that. But it's just great days, And the circuit, the pro circuit then, was full of mums and dads and people that from the amateur game. They all grew up together. So your mum and dad came as a social thing as well as watching you. So it was brilliant for them. They wanted to go to every tournament. You know. And every time you won, it was brilliant. They could have another day at the venue talking rubbish with their mates. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
While we did all the practice.
Yeah. But it's also, in terms of back then, the circuit, obviously a lot of new players coming in, but you still had the sort of legends who you'd watched on the TV. They were still all pretty much going strong, a lot of them declining. But you suddenly you were rubbing shoulders with these sort of guys. What was that like?
Yeah. It was funny, weird playing the Nug. I was thinking I was 15-0 down to him before I even realised that I had to start playing. Lost 5-0, 5-0, 5-0. I was watching him. Like,
he's real.
I remember playing Hendry when this was about 92, 93, so he was at the top of his game. I looked at his shoes, He had silver on the bottom of his shoes, and he looked like $1 million. And I'm thinking, I can't be that. How can I be that? Do you know what I mean? He's walking around like a racehorse.
Yeah. So was there a specific moment where you thought, okay, I'm making a breakthrough here, or was it a gradual improvement?
Gradual for me, yeah. Yeah, it was gradual. Gradual, it was the same in the amateur game. It was gradual for me. With the last year, before I turned pro, I was probably the best amateur around, but it took me that long to get there. I mean, with Hebden was like God at the start and stuff. So just gradual, but I always enjoyed those big matches. They're still my favourite matches, playing Hendry and Davis and not being able to breathe. And like, you know, you actually could have beaten them, but you had the standard to beat them. It's different now. We used to like admire them so much. Do you know what I mean? Like, and you wouldn't see them. There's no. Yeah. You're not playing in, you know, when you saw them, it was like on the TV, bang, there he is, the milk.
Yeah.
So you like, you know what I mean, they had that on you. That's gone now, isn't it? Mm. So it was hard to get over the... I remember finally beating Steve Davis, and I beat Andrew Woods a couple of times. And I remember against Steve just thinking, well, that's enough. Just play now. Just concentrate. Come on. Because, you know, you're a good player. Come on. You win this match. He's not playing well. And then that's it. Then you play against anyone.
What about the Crucible? I mean, obviously you grew up quite close to it, really, geographically. Yeah. But had you been to watch there before you played there? No. So the first time you were there, you were playing. What was that like?
Yeah, brilliant. Played Nigel, my practice partner. I was 5-0 down. I was like that. All I could think was, who's got B10 now?
Yeah.
I'm like that. I don't think anyone has. I remember Eddie getting beat 10-1 and David's got beat 10-1. I'm like that. I don't think anyone's ever got beat 10-0.
Eddie Charlton did, actually.
Did he?
Or John Parrott, yeah.
Right,
yeah.
There you go.
He's the only one, yeah.
I'm thinking, I'm going to set a record, the most horrific record ever. But I won a frame, and then I was it, loving life. I think I ended up losing 10-5, but couldn't breathe. Best day of your life.
Did you get the whole thing about how claustrophobic it was?
Yeah.
Because everyone, even going to watch people say, I just can't believe how small it is.
Yeah. Mm. And when you're in your seat, it's a lot smaller. Like, you know, like you've got the ref and the other player, and you've got there's like a dance, isn't there? Like, everyone's going to get. It's tough playing someone the first time because they don't know the clockwise or the anticlockwise way that you've got to come back from the table.
Sure.
Do you know what I mean? So you're sort of almost going, like, no, you go around that way. Once you get involved, once you get into the swing at Sheffield, you like it. You don't love it because it's too nerve-wracking, but you love it because it's like that. You know what I mean? It's sadistic love. Even now, if I qualified again, I know that I wouldn't be able to breathe, but I'd like it.
What about the opposite, I guess, the Crucible is the Wembley Conference Centre, which was the home of the Masters for many years. That was a vast place, wasn't it? You know, it's like a mile to get back to your seat. What was it like playing there?
Loved it. Fantastic. You know, you felt like... a tennis player or golfer, you'd be looked after properly. There was women walking around offering you fags and drinks, and they were hot, and you were like, what is this? This is ace, and you're playing for loads of time. You're staying at the Hilton next door, it was just different class. I got to the sevens one year as well, it was fantastic. And the size of the venue too, I mean, I liked it because you could breathe, you know what I mean? Like, Crucible's a bit like you said, claustrophobic. This was more, you could just get out and like you could walk about and like the nerves would go a little bit. I played Drago and I realised within a frame that I couldn't make it back to my chair before he played safe. So I just don't stand halfway.
So, because of being in the Masters, you're in the top 16. So you got yourself in the top 16 from when the game went open. There's over like 500 people, so that's an achievement in itself. Were you one of those players who, when you got in the 16, you thought, right, I've made it now, or was it a case of, right, I must make sure I stay in, and you sort of looking over your shoulder?
I remember thinking getting to number 10, and then looking at the ranking list, right, and the ranking list was strong then. The worst player above me was Stephen Lee. And then Ken was strong. I remember looking above me and thinking, and I remember going through them individually going, do I think I can be better than them? And I end up going like that. No, 10's where it should be.
Right, yeah.
You know what I mean? Hendry, Davis, Parrott, Doherty.
Because it was a kind of crossover period, wasn't it? You still had the Davises and the Parrots and the Jimmy Whites, but you also had... Like the I guess people like Stevens Hunter were coming through, Stephen Lee you've mentioned.
Yeah.
So it's sort of a clash of two eras that you found yourself in.
Yeah. Well, two or three eras really. Yeah, there was our lot, Ebden, me, Clarkie just before, Gary outside, all them machines, absolute machine players, you know, like the forgotten more than most players now. And then we, and then us, and then the Hunter and Stevens, and then since then there hasn't been a there hasn't been a batch. There's been trickles, hasn't there? But that's the last good batch.
Well, eventually you reach your first final British Open in Plymouth, 1999 against Fergal O'Brien. Started with two centuries, you know, it looked like he could run away with it. And then I remember he won all the close frames. Yeah, I think he won five on the black or something, and eventually won. What are your memories of that day?
Yeah, he just played fantastic. I thought. It was close frame when he was putting long ones and playing all the great shots, and I felt like I was making 80 every time I got in. I loved it. They were gutted that it was me and him in the final. You could tell it. Do you know what I mean? You could tell it was Sky at the time. They were absolutely distraught. But it was a good final. So
yeah,
and they ended up being really patronised at the end, going, "Oh, we were so happy that you both played well. Well, we know you are."
But I mean,
I remember thinking, I laughed if I was winning the Masters and I'm missing it. That's what I remember thinking, my favourite golfer.
Yeah.
So I was a bit gutted. I mean, like, he won his first Masters. So that was, tell you what it was.
1999.
Yeah. But I loved it. I made two tons, like you said, and played Fergal, who I got to know well afterwards.
But did you say that? Because I guess there wouldn't have been much between you. You probably would have been favourite going in. It's not like you're playing Hendry, you know, where he's a heavy favourite. Did you feel, actually, this is a big chance here to win a big tournament?
I wasn't thinking anything. I was just in a final. Do you know what I mean? Like, because the whole week was a blur. It was the hardest draw you've ever seen. It was mad, the draw. It was like Hunter, Foo, Davis, Hendry, Williams. I was like that. All I've got to beat is Ronnie and John, because they were in the other quarters. But they both got beat. So It was a bit of a mad week. I didn't think anything. I just played. Do you know what I mean? And then I was happy. Looking back, I should have been gutted. You know, but I was happy that I just enjoyed the day. Because it's a big do. You're in the final. Like, everyone's watching you.
Yeah.
It's different. There's no one else. But you know, if you've gone, you can't just think to yourself, no, watch that semi-final. You know what I mean? Like, I'm watching you.
Yeah, yeah. So what about the next final, 2002 China Open, against Mark Williams? I mean, that was in Shanghai, wasn't it? I remember, because you were 8-5 up, and he'd won 9-8, and you said afterwards, you know, I should have won that. I mean, felt that you should have won that.
I did choke, I couldn't believe how nervous I got. Couldn't breathe, couldn't swallow, everything went. I remember going 7-5 at the interval, and I was in my, one of the rooms in China, with my mate Nick Walker, who used to be a pro, and he'd stayed on for the week, and I'm trying to talk to him, but all I can think about is, how bad I feel, how nervous I am, you know, because I was playing so well. And then I made a good break to go 8-5, and I had a couple of half chances in the next two frames where I wasn't that nervous. And then as soon as it went 8-7, bang, I was gone. I was like, double vision, I couldn't see, I couldn't think, I was panicking, I was like, oh my God, I might not win. You know what I mean? Like, cause I'd been the boss all day. And looking back, I enjoyed how it made me feel. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's like being on drugs. It's mad.
But you've always kind of been one to, you know, you make light of these things, but that would have been a big deal to win that, wouldn't it?
Gutted.
I mean, do you sort of think about it often, or have you managed to let it go?
Let it go immediately, because Nick said to me, what we're doing, we're going to Koh Phangan from here, because he could see I was suicidal. You know what I mean? Like, and we were big travelling mates. Snooker was everything for us. You know, we used to do loads of stuff. And he knew I was absolutely devastated. I was devastated in the pub afterwards. And he was like, right, tomorrow we're getting up and we're going to Koh Phangan for a week because we've got a week off and we're just going to get pissed and forget about it. And I forgot about it. I did forget about it.
Till I just brought it up again, 15 years on, whatever it is.
But it's still one of my three or four favourite memories of snooker.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because I loved it. I didn't miss. I couldn't miss. I was making 80 every single poker. Like 70, 80. Every time Mark lost, he was one and one maybe, I think, at the time. Yeah. Every time he missed, I was punching him. I was the best player. Best player there by a mile. And I just twitched. And I can honestly say that it was that much for me that if I was in that same position now, I might do the same thing again.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? Because you know, you're like, well, that was, I couldn't deal with it.
People often say about you, it's kind of like a real backhanded compliment that you're the best player not to win a ranking event.
Yeah.
Have you thought about that? Do you think you should have won one? I mean, is that how players think about it? Ryan Day, I guess, he's another player in that position who's been in finals and hasn't quite Yeah.
No, I obviously should have won that China one. But I tell you, all my best years when I was playing great, I kept beat by Hendry.
Mm-hmm.
In great matches. Mm-hmm. In the quarters, and the last 16 in the quarters, and the semi in the quarters. Mm-hmm. For about 5 or 6 years, I lost to him about 11 times. And I didn't miss a ball. I was playing better than... I personally thought I was playing better than anyone else in the tournament, apart from him. I was making 100 every poke. Mm-hmm. And I just kept getting beat by him. And then when you do have some good draws, I twitched because of that. And then... Before you know, the years just seem to like. I started off every season just assuming I was going to win a tournament because I was good. I thought I was the best in the world in practice. If someone was better, then I'd like to have seen it because it was. I just never used to miss for years. You know what I mean? So I was just assumed that I'd win at least one tournament. I thought I'd win more than one. Do you know what I mean? And then. That year went, and then that next year went, and before you know, you're like, actually, I'm going to have to reappraise. I don't think I'm going to win one now. Mm. Still, you're like, and then, so I forgot, I stopped thinking about winning 1 year back, because it doesn't do you any good. But I don't feel like I've missed out, because, you know, I wouldn't be that proud if I won one now.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? It's still pathetic. You know what I'm saying?
Mm. But you saw though what
it should have won five.
Yeah, but having said that though, you saw in Belfast what it meant to Mark King. It was came through the same time as you.
Yeah.
After 25 years, you know, you could see that it actually meant a lot to him.
It means a lot. It means a lot because he wants to win it for his dad as well, and he's put all the hard work in and that. But I tell my mum and dad all the time what I think about him. So nothing needs to be set right. Nothing needs to. They don't want anything other than me just enjoying myself and playing hard and that. So I'd still be, if I won one, I'd be happy. But then in another year, I'd still be like, you're still pathetic when you won the ranking tournament. Do you know what I mean? Like, right. it's not great.
Right.
It's not a good career.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean?
But around this time, it also, you had a setback because you broke your wrist. And the story at the time was that you're out somewhere in London and someone was being mugged and you kind of intervened. What was the kind of story?
Well, we were hammered.
Right.
In Stoke Newington, right. About 4 a.m.
Yeah.
And my mate, well, I was a friend of a friend. We were looking for a taxi, and he got 200 quid out of the hole in the wall and just waved it in the air like an idiot. I'm like, what are you, three? Right? And this taxi driver, little guy, just had it, bang. I started running towards me, and I was like, one of them, he was quick.
Mm.
And I sort of jumped on him. And I had him for a few seconds, but you're hammered. Like, you've got no chance, have you? And I must have gone down a bit funny when I sort of half had him. And then about, I was so drunk I didn't feel it for about an hour to hour or two until I got home. And I was like, you know what, I think I'll be really painful then.
Mm. But it was a knockback, wasn't it? Because you missed a few tournaments. Yeah. And obviously then your ranking gets affected and so on.
Yeah, I dropped out of 16 really because of that. A lot. I missed the next tournament, whenever it was. I missed the UK. I played in the UK. I played Dominic, but I couldn't play. I lost 9-0. And then, so I missed 3 tournaments. Mm. Out of 10 is a lot, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, dropped out of 16. And, but that was the time, fully enough, that I was at my best. I was at my best, like, in practice, when I was out in 16, when I first moved to Ilford for those first four or five years. I was just making, like, 15 tournaments a day.
Mm.
Just ridiculously good. Do you know what I mean? Like, so it was after I dropped out of 16 that I was playing my best.
Mm.
So I was, you know, I think the ranking list does sometimes lie a little bit, you know. I got back into the 16 as well eventually.
Mm.
You know, like when the people really weren't doing that much, I think Stephen Lee was the first maybe.
But the thing is, you had to wait a whole year, didn't you? The point, it's not like now every tournament that gets chipped, the ranking list just changed. Yeah. Back then, even if you won the first tournament of the season, you had to wait in like 9 months to be rewarded.
Yeah, yeah. I think there was good and bad about both. Mm. You know what I mean? Like it's like the tennis now, isn't it? It's a bit harsh.
Mm.
Like Josh, which wins every tournament, and then like has to win him again the next year. Otherwise, he's dropping points. Mm. I'm like, that. Come on, that's a bit too harsh. Mm. It comes to the middle ground.
Mm.
There's no middle ground, really.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about your nickname, which is always kind of a source of great amusement. It's quite a clever one, the Sheriff of Pottingham. But it's one of those when you break it down, it's kind of ridiculous, really.
Well,
you're not actually a sheriff, and there's nowhere called Pottingham.
Alan Hughes won't be happy because he started off the Robin Hood and one.
Yeah.
Which was, I liked.
Mm.
I liked, you know, you've got no choice of you, but But obviously you lot in the press room thought, well, Pottingham, Nottingham, yeah, that'll do, Sheriff Pottingham, and that stuck, you know. It's better than Swampy. It was Swampy for a while.
Remember that? I do. Well, a lot of people listening won't remember who Swampy was. He was basically a guy who was an anti-road protester and sort of lived in a tunnel for a while. Yeah. And he was became a celebrity for about a month. He was like on the news. He was on Have I Got News For You and all sorts of programmes. And so one of the journalists sort of likened you to him, which wasn't exactly a compliment.
Well, I didn't care.
No, you didn't care.
Dad was gutted.
Your dad wasn't happy, was he?
No. Yeah, I remember him stormed into the press room, didn't he?
Who's done this? Every head went down. Not me. Nothing to do with me.
It was all those sponsors that were lining up to not sponsor me that might not have sponsored me. Never happened anyway, did it?
Well, let's talk, because you've been pulled up, I think, by Will Snooker about your clothes and your appearance before. Is that
shoes? I got pulled up for once. They weren't clean enough, and a bow tie because I used to have that silly bow tie. Mm. I'm a bit better now, but also that was it really.
But you're not, because some players they'll wear their fancy shoes, won't they, and make a point of it. You're not one of those, are you?
No, I don't want to feel like, because I'm actually not that scruffy when I'm away from the table. I don't like to feel like I'm too pristine. Mm. And then I'm trying to keep everything pristine. I just want to go out and work. Mm. You know what I mean? Like, just be like, I don't care what I look like in the snooker suit, really. Some of the new kids are all like the pinstripe trousers and stuff, aren't they? And can't make 30 like that. Well, they were great.
As you're getting beat, yeah. What's it like being a snooker pro? What's it like? I mean, there must have been, particularly when you were top 16, you know, in Tesco or wherever you are, and someone comes up to you and recognises you. What's that like?
Yeah, everyone's nice. Mm. You know, most people are nice to you. A few people are idiots when you're drunk, when you're getting drunk and stuff. And you learn to keep your mouth shut, because I'm quite dry and gobby. Mm. I used to like, you know, say something back to him. I've had a couple of hits and stuff, you know. So then you realise it's lose-lose. You can. So it's generally great, I think. It's not like football where they're passionate either for you or against you. They're quite admire your skill. Mm. And what can they say? Oh, you've got a rubbish correction. Like, you're like, oh, I won't sleep for half a week. You know, they're always nice. Mm. And I've had just enough of to not be too mad or stuff. You know, I remember having a few girlfriends. I didn't really tell that I was a snooker player. I didn't mention it. Mm. And they're like, you seem to know everyone when we're not even in your home area. You know what I mean? You're like, oh, I'm so popular. We got a bottle of vodka once given me, like, in a bar. And she was like, ah, well, this is great. What's happening here?
What about in terms of, like, your relationship with the other players? Because you've seen a lot of players sort of come and go over the years. Some players will spend all their time with other players, and some don't want to know. But are you, I guess you're sort of middle ground.
I'm middle ground. I keep to my own. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, my own's getting less, now. Like, McCulloch's gone, and Nick Walker's gone, and Barry Pinter's gone, and Dave Allen, these four people that have gone. The normal people. There's plenty of them about. You know what I mean? Like, there's less than there used to be. Mm. Just the normal people, you know, like, the non-snooker players. Mm. You know, the last thing they're going to talk about is snooker. Mm. People. Mm.
You know. So are you one that you won't necessarily watch snooker between tournaments, or if you've been knocked out?
I do watch it, because I don't know why. As I get older, I feel like I'm getting more of a fan. It's mad. Right. Crazy.
Yeah.
I've got more knowledge and a few more opinions on the right shot, the wrong shot, the other. So I watch it and I'm just get hooked, and I end up like forgetting how tough it is. Mm. Like, what are you doing there? Mm. You know. But no, I watch it, and I watch finals, of course, because that's where the real twitching goes off. I like to see people twitch. Mm. I like to see the pressure. I like to see someone, you know, Mark Selby's finals recently, fantastic under pressure. Just, you know, the admiration of that, because I know how hard it is. Do you know what I mean? So I like to watch it and wish I was there once and stuff, and just admire the great players and how they are good they are under pressure and stuff, you know, because for me it doesn't go unnoticed. You know, I've got a lot of admiration for them.
You've slipped down the rankings a little in recent years, but you've had back and shoulder trouble. What's been the problem?
Well, it's the spine. Spinal damage, bones of the I think a lot of players would get them. Like most people in their 60s and stuff, when they were working in an office, they get it on the front because they've been looking down for 40 years. Well, we've been looking up, so the spine, it sort of grinds against each other, and the bones are worn down, the cartilage is dehydrated in between. This was 10 years ago now. I went to the Harley Street, and he said, "You're not totally effed, but you're not long." You know what I mean? Like, you don't look that long. He said, "It won't get any better. You can do stretches and stuff like that." And but so it affects like all your back and your muscles, your neck. They obviously know that damage is there, and they're just always trying to protect it. Like, so going into spasm all the time. And you get one at the bottom right of your back. It ends up the day after on the left-hand side. Everything's connected, I realised. I know all the muscle groups now and stuff, you know, so everything's connected. I mean, before I came out here, I had to have 2 days off because I had two twinges, and the next day I couldn't look up properly. So you'd have to read the signs, you know. I can just do a bit, practice. I can never get down properly. Do you know what I mean? So sometimes under pressure, I'll miss some easy balls. I'm like, I definitely wouldn't have missed that 10 years back because you could just force yourself down to the shot properly. But I've decided that if I was going to keep on playing, that I'd have to improve my mental side of the game because I'm rubbish now because of the back. You know what I mean? I'm rubbish. I'll be honest. But I'm a good tryer and a lot of experience, and that takes some beating.
Yeah. Well, you're having a good season. I mean, obviously the highlight, I guess, so far has been the semi-finals in Belfast. What was it like, you know, getting to the last weekend again, very nearly getting to the final? Did that sort of rekindle a few memories of when you were
funny,
top 16 player?
It's funny. I got to the quarters of Manchester when I got to the semis in I'm going to make you smile here, because of Belfast, and I hated the ends of the tournaments because I liked the bits... before that,
right,
the anonymous bits,
right,
and then all of a sudden you like everyone's like asking you questions. No. I'm like, no. You know, I'd rather it was before now. You know, like just snooker, and then all of a sudden you got to get involved in the show bit, which is all right, you know. But I was just trying to keep it the same again, like, you know, boring stuff, one shot at a time. It was good though. You know, I enjoyed it because I played great against Barry.
Yeah,
felt great for the first time in about 5 or 6 years. I felt great on the shot. I knew I was going to make 80 every time I got in. It's just a nice feeling to have that in practice. So it was nice to get it in such a big match. And then I touched the white like an idiot.
Yeah, you know? I mean, again, was that something that you just managed to sort of put to one side? Or after all these years, when you got so close to a final, was that tough to take?
It was tough to take about a month after I realised, what was this? But I was so happy with the way I dealt with the being 5-3 down at the time and played great, and you know, I thought to myself, seriously, like 6 weeks before that, I had no money left in the bank, and I was like struggling. I don't know what I was going to do for like the entry fees and all the stuff that. And I'm like, how can you be gutted that 6 weeks later you've been to a quarters, a last 16, and now the semis? You cannot, you're not allowed to be gutted. You know what I mean? Like, that's just folly, isn't it? Like 6 weeks before, you're on the floor. So you'd be stupid to stupidity to be overly gutted. I was thinking I'll get another chance because I'm thinking I'll do it like after Christmas or something. You know what I mean?
What about the money in the game? I mean, obviously there's much more tournaments, but there's more travelling, there's more expenses. Like you say, you got to pay to enter tournaments, you got to pay to get to tournaments, and all the expenses you incur when you're at them. How hard is that for a player who's not, you know, in the top four in the world? There's a lot of players down the list who are struggling, aren't they?
Yeah. Well, most of the new ones have got sponsors, and the sponsors take 2 or 3 years before they realise that they're not going to get anything back. But there's obviously new sponsors for the new players because they're the big fish in the small pond in their club. So that's all. I've got no chance of getting a sponsor. Do you know what I mean? Like, because you're old and knackered. But like, if you're new and rubbish, then everybody, the best in your club is whatever, in Folkestone or whatever. You know what I mean? You're going to get a sponsor, aren't you?
Right, yeah.
You know what I mean? So there's plenty of sponsors, and there needs to be because it's you'd have to be. Don't think anyone outside the top 50 is on more than minimum wage after the expenses gone out. You know what I mean? Like minimum wage. and if you've got family and stuff, I don't see, it's hardly viable. For me, it's viable because I've got no family, I've got no commitments and stuff, and I can live on 12 quid a day if need be, which I was doing, you know. Mm. So you get by doing that, just. But still at some point, you've got to earn some money to keep the business going. Mm. That's where I was at. Mm. But a lot of players are in the same boat, and that's why they don't enter everything. Mm. You know what I mean? And they're under stress every match. It's... I'm not saying that it shouldn't be like that. It's sort of, it was always like that, mm. a little bit in a way. It's just that the tournaments obviously cost more to... don't get much help off the World Snooker either anymore with when it comes to hotels and stuff like that. You know what I mean? Like, the old days, you could just book the hotel for a week, and then once you got beat, you just say, oh, I'm checking out. Mm. You can't do that anymore. Do you know what I mean? So you don't get any help for the World Snooker at all, because there's no chance of you knowing how long you're going to be there for. One night or 8 nights. Mm. Do you know what I mean? Belfast, it was costing me, at the end, you know, like 300 quid a night. Because there's no rooms left. Mm. It's ridiculous. Mm. There's no way that the golf or the tennis would let that happen. They'd have some sort of thing going with the hotel, or yeah. a hotel, or hotels, you know, like, this is happening, is it possible we could save these rooms? There's only going to be X amount of players in.
Sure.
Do you know what I mean? You can work it out, can't you? Surely. Mm. It would help. Mm. But no, everything's left to your own device now. You've got to be clever, book rooms to make sure that you book rooms there, that you know that you can, like, check out before 12 and you don't get charged the full fare. You're doing all that. Mm. Doing after matches now is madness. Mm. We'll do it again in a minute. Mm. You know what I mean?
But I get the feeling, despite all that, you're still very passionate about snooker, aren't you? Yeah, you still love it, and yeah. you know you've had reason maybe to give it up with your back trouble and whatever, but you haven't. You're still going.
Yeah, I missed playing well. I missed that because I play well. I feel rubbish all the time. Do you know what I mean? Right. On every single shot, I feel absolutely rubbish all the time, but. And I miss the feeling of thinking I'm going to make 100 every time. But I've gained the like, today, winning, where I couldn't make 30 in my head. Just digging in, you know, and thinking well, and the mental side of that, and just being, like, really humble out there, forgetting about how well you used to be able to play, and this is what you've got, and, like, can you win? And you can. Mm. It's madness. Like, you don't have to play that well. Mm.
If anything, it's an ageing tour now. A lot of... Yeah. Winners, finalists, semi-finalists are in their 40s, but obviously no one can go on forever. What have you given any thought to, if you have to hang up your queue, what the sort of future holds?
Yeah, I think I'm going to do coaching.
Okay.
Yeah. Started doing a bit when I was skint before in the club, and I didn't think I'd like it, you know, and I loved it. I didn't love it, but I didn't hate it either. If someone was wanted an hour, I'd be doing an hour and a half because I just wanted them to get this last thing, you know what I mean? So that obviously I've got that bug of trying to help people. Mm. And I know all about the queue action and from the Frank Callan days, you know what I mean? So I know all about the queue action and what this does, what that does. And if I was going to do it seriously, you'd have to sit down and think about, like, the ways you would do it. It's not good enough just to know everything.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you have to be like, this I do like this way with the kids, and this way with the, if you did a pro or something, you'd have to sit down and properly think about it. You can't just go, oh, I was a pro, so I'm going to know what, you've got to get it across to the right personality and stuff. So I'll be interested in doing that, I'll be honest. You know what I mean? I'd like to do coach pros, I'd like to coach kids, I'd like to coach anyone. Mm. You know, like, I think I could do a bit of everything. Mm. And I'd always be right behind them. Mm. You know what I mean?
And what do you do, finally, to sort of switch off from snooker? Because it's quite an intense game, it's quite an intense sport. What sort of things do you have going on where you can just forget about it?
Well, I used to go to the pub all the time.
Well, that's one way.
Yeah, I used to go to the pub all the time with all my mates in London. Now they're all sodded off, like, around the world and stuff. So, give them the chance to go to the pub, but I don't want to look after myself now. I just watch a lot of films, you know, I'm a bit of a film buff. And I read a bit. And I watch sport, of course. I mean, I love sport. Mm. Like, I love some of the mad sports, though, that are on your channel.
Right,
that's the best channel.
Yeah.
By mile, biathlon. I love biathlon. Yeah. I love skiing.
Yeah.
I love. I went to biathlon properly. You know, all these sports that no one knows about.
It's a very tough sport because it's two ridiculous things to combine: shooting and cross country skiing.
Yeah, and the more you miss, the more you got to try and catch up and catch 22. Yeah. I love it. Mm. You know, you got Bjorn Dahlen still doing it at 42. It's a fantastic sport. Cycling is my favourite sport of all time. So I watch all three tours. Mm. I watch them properly, like every single day. Mm. You know what I mean? Like. So I'm in sport, but not necessarily the football that all the other players are into. You know what I mean, like it's more than football. Football's like it's played by like the worst people on the planet, isn't it? Let's be right.
No comment. Finally, then you don't regret taking up snooker all those years ago. You're glad that you sort of found your way into the game.
I haven't done a day's work. I've not done a day's work since I left school. Mm. It's like cheating life, isn't it? Mm. And we worked hard, you know, but I worked hard. I worked, that's why the back went. But it's good work because you do it whenever you want to do it, and you get paid well sometimes, and you got great memories and you meet great people. Mm. Fantastic. Mm. Yeah.
Good. Well, it's good to hear that. It's good to hear that you've enjoyed yourself, and let's hope that you continue for many years to come.
Yeah. Cheers, Dave.
Thanks a lot, Anthony. Thanks, cheers.